Hancock versus Potter. Mr. Andre.
May it please the court.
Ms. Mallory, Mr. Walsh.
Now, this case involves a postal employee who, for years, had worked at the post office without incident, never had any issues or problems. However, at some point, she felt that she was being discriminated against, and she filed a union grievance indicating that she was being discriminated against in violation of the union contract, which incorporated discrimination claims as part of the union contract that she could grieve. That matter was taken up. Involved in those procedures was a management official by the name of Linda Medeiros. And Ms. Medeiros took a negative view towards my clients having complained about management treatment and discrimination.
Discrimination, someplace you said about gender and age. I didn't see much of that in the brief.
Well, let me first of all state that I would like to limit my argument here to the question of retaliation. On the other matters...
Disability? On a disability claim?
Or? The retaliation claim really has to do with all of the claims of discrimination. But the others, I'd like to stand on my brief with respect to the age and others. The claim that I really want to address to the court in oral argument has to do with the summary judgment based on the claim that my client was not retaliated against in this case. So I'd like to focus attention on that. And the reason I want to specifically focus attention on that is because to me it seems crystal clear that the ruling on that is not even subject to argument, that the district court is simply wrong. Summary judgment, as we all know, is only allowable in a situation where there are no disputed facts and no inferences can be drawn in favor of the plaintiff, that the plaintiff should be allowed to proceed to go to a jury trial, as opposed to having her proceedings abbreviated by virtue of a judge making a determination that adequately should go to a jury. In this case, it's very clear that the inferences from the very testimony and the statements of Ms. Medeiros herself present direct proof of retaliation. The cases have laid it out very clearly that there's not just one way to prove a discrimination case, the indirect method, that there is a direct way to prove it. And Chief Judge Posner has made it meticulously clear how we would look at this point of proving by direct evidence. We don't have to concern ourselves with the prima facie case or the inferences from McDonnell Douglas. If a person says that they're discriminating, and they say that they are retaliating, then that in and of itself in the job setting is proof enough to take the matter to a jury and let the jury determine whether that discriminatory attitude affected the decisions that they made with regard to employment. In this case, what we have is, after clear evidence that Ms. Medeiros was aware of the discrimination complaints by my client, Ms. Medeiros says that she felt that my client, quote, was not a team player, and therefore she denied her or defeated her attempts to get promotions. Now, it's important to keep in mind that Ms. Medeiros was not my client's immediate supervisor who saw her work from day to day. The immediate supervisor of my client with respect to her opportunity to be promoted specifically said my client should be promoted.
Well, this is for training for something. It's not really for the promotion.
Well, the training was for a supervisory position.
Right, but it wasn't a guaranteed supervisory position.
Well, I'm not certain whether it was guaranteed or not. I don't know. My assumption is, based on my reading of it, that was that after she had the training, it wasn't necessary for her to go and apply for promotion, that the training was for the purpose of her being put in that position. I assume that if she absolutely failed to understand what she was being taught, that she wouldn't be forced to get the position. But I saw no indication that she had to involve herself in the promotional process or to seek supervisory positions after she got this training. But even if that were the case, if all this was training for supervisory positions, it opened an opportunity for her to advance. And that's the whole point of the discrimination statutes, to give equal opportunity. And it's very clear from the affidavits that we presented that she was not presented that. We have union stewards who indicated how differently my client was being treated. But more to the point was, my client's immediate supervisor says, yes, she's ready, she should be allowed. And in fact, when my client's supervisor did that, Ms. Medeiros called him in, Mr. Stevenson, and threatened him, told him, you better say that she's not qualified for these positions. And when he would not, when he showed himself to me a man of integrity, then she rode him and rode him and rode him throughout the rest of his career. She denied him opportunities then. So it's very clear that that must be accepted in a summary judgment setting. There was no rebuttal saying that Mr. Stevenson made this up, that, you know, there was no way that Ms. Medeiros said these things to him. No, and Ms. Medeiros never really tried to get away from her disdain for my client. She, again, on a second attempt where my client was going for this training for a supervisory position, under a different supervisor, where that supervisor said, Ms. Hancock should be promoted to this position. Ms. Medeiros again came in and said, no, 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 no. I'm not going to permit her to go into these positions. Why? Because she has a negative attitude toward management. Because she filed complaints of harassment. She specifically said this. So we don't have a situation where we have to glean and we have to discern from air what it is that Ms. Medeiros' attitude was towards my client based upon her asserting her federally protected rights to complain about discrimination. We have it, so to speak, from the horse's mouth. Specifically, Ms. Medeiros says, she should not get these opportunities because of the fact that she filed claims against management of harassment and discrimination. I can't think of a clearer instance where there's direct evidence of discrimination than that type of testimony from the very person who is blocking the position. As a matter of fact, the officials who were determining whether she got the opportunity said she's not getting this opportunity because of Medeiros' statements that she shouldn't get these opportunities. For all those reasons, she should be allowed to go to a jury and have a jury determine and draw inferences from the facts whether she was retaliated against. We would like to reserve the balance of our time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Manchin. Ms. Mallory?
May it please the court, counsel. Were the facts as stated by Mr. Andre accurate? I agree. We would need to go to a jury on this, but they are not. There was a grievance procedure that Ms. Hancock implemented in 1998, March of 1998. During that procedure, she grieved the typical type of conduct that an employee grieves, a particular instance of being disciplined or warned for some behavior. She did not, in that grievance, state that she had been discriminated against or identify a basis, a prohibited status under which she had been discriminated against. So in those grievances, there is no mention of discrimination or a basis for discrimination. There is a reference to a number of collective bargaining agreement articles, one of which is equal treatment, but no specific reference to any discriminatory treatment in those grievances.
What was she grieving?
She grieved, in one instance, she was disciplined for taking a lunch break after being advised that she could not take it during that particular time. And I believe the second grievance had to do with the way a Supervisor Woods, spoke to her on the work floor about some particular issue. And so she asked for more respectful treatment from him. But even then didn't raise discrimination as the basis for her grievance. Then, in March of 1999, Manager Medeiros, who is a second-level supervisor above the mid-level supervisors that did concur in a recommendation for Ms. Hancock to attend that supervisory training program, passed her concurrence on, and she is required to either agree or disagree. She disagreed with both of those midline supervisors. First in March of 1999, She disagreed for a variety of reasons. Her disagreement is stated, specifically written out, in a document which is in the record, which you may refer to, and she does not say what counsel has argued she said. She basically said, among several reasons, one of which that Ms. Hancock had made complaints about management harassing her, that she did not work well with others, that she had other discipline issues, things like that that made her unqualified to be a supervisor. She never mentioned that she had filed a claim of discrimination against anybody in those reasonings that she gave, and those are in writing. So the record's clear what she said. She did the same thing in August of 1999, same kind of document. She did not concur in the recommendation, and she did not say that she was failing to concur because of Ms. Hancock's claims of discrimination. So the evidence is not as plaintiff has described it.
What was it? Their sort of contentious relationship, or didn't get along with management, or was sort of anti-management? There's something in there about that. Is that part of her objection, Medeiros' objection?
That she didn't get along with management?
Something about anti-management or...
Anti-management maybe may have been used. I'd have to go pull the document. Her contention is that Ms. Hancock, when disciplined or addressed as to any work issue, is combative. That is what Ms. Medeiros testified, something to that effect in her deposition. She also provided deposition testimony, and never in that testimony did she say that she refused to recommend Ms. Hancock for the supervisory training program because she filed an EEO discrimination complaint. In fact, in her deposition testimony, she makes clear she was not aware of any EEO-type complaint until September of 1999. Which is after all of these recommendations that are at issue here. So she had no idea of any prior EEO activity. The March 1998 grievances were not prior EEO activity. They don't qualify under our circuit's law. They're internal grievances, but they don't clearly raise or even infer from their facts a discriminatory basis. So that they do not qualify as prior prohibited complaints of prohibited activity, and as such, they can't form the basis of prior activity for a retaliation claim, which they would need to do for plaintiff to proceed with their case. With respect to how Ms. Hancock was treated at work, the evidence is that her coworkers provided statements that she was hassled, harassed, or that she was being worked outside her restrictions. But they never connected that conduct to any sort of basis, gender, sex, gender, race, age, even disability. They never connected it. They never pointed to any other employees who were treated better. We have no record of any other employee treated differently than Ms. Hancock from plaintiff's evidence.
Were there other gripers that were denied this opportunity, whatever?
Not that we know of, because we don't have anything to compare to. And that was the district court's problem with plaintiff's case, as well as finding no adverse actions with respect to the substantive discrimination claims. He also found that there were no evidence of similarly situated employees that he could compare to. And the prima facie case then failed. With respect to the retaliation case, the district court found that the comments made by Ms. Medeiros, looking directly to those comments because they're in written form for you and they're made part of the record when you look at the supervisory recommendations, were not direct evidence. He found them vague and innocuous. He found that taken along with every other comment that was made in that same recommendation, they did not indicate that Manager Medeiros was retaliating against the plaintiff. He also moved on to the indirect method and found, once again, no evidence of similarly situated employees to compare Ms. Hancock to determine whether she was being retaliated against by Ms. Medeiros. Asking any questions, I'll rest on my brief and ask that you affirm the district court's decision.
Thank you, Ms. Mallory. Mr. Andre.
Your
very important to recall that with regard to retaliation issues, there are two legs to the retaliation prohibitions of the Civil Rights Act. One is that you're prohibited from retaliating against a person who participates in EEO activity. The other is you are prohibited from retaliating against a person who otherwise opposes discrimination. There are two legs to that. And what the point is that we're making is this, and this is in our brief on page 5. On March 9th, my client filed a grievance. It was a union grievance, and the grievance was based upon a violation of the article of the union agreement that says non-discrimination in civil rights. And it stated the employer and the union agree that there shall be no discrimination by the employer or the union against employees because of race, color, creed, religion, national origin, sex, age, or marital status. In addition, consistent with other provisions of this agreement, there shall be no unlawful discrimination against handicapped employees as prohibited by the Rehabilitation Act. That was the grievance that so offended Ms. Medeiros that Ms. Medeiros then came out later with this statement, and this is on page 6 of our brief. It is my personal opinion that Teresa would not be a good candidate for the Associate Supervisor Program. Teresa has filed grievances claiming harassment from management, refused overtime, been charged AWOL, plus she has a very negative attitude toward management. Ms. Medeiros, with regard to the second attempt by my client to better herself, made this statement, contrary to the supervisor at that time. I do not feel that Ms. Hancock would be a good candidate for this program. Ms. Hancock is a mediocre employee with a bad attitude. She's refused overtime and been charged AWOL, received discipline for failing to follow orders, and claims management is harassing her.
So your retaliation claim is a direct claim, direct evidence, not indirect?
It's actually both, but the point is that...
What about the comparators?
The comparators are all listed in what the union steward said in her affidavit. The union steward handles complaints by a number of individuals, and the question was asked, I believe, by Judge Mannion, whether or not other persons who disputed matters were treated the same as her, and counsel admitted that they have no indication of that. It's clear from our record that people who didn't dispute weren't treated as she was. And the point is that it's not just direct, specific evidence that you use in a summary judgment case. Inferences are supposed to be drawn in favor of the plaintiff. They're supposed to be drawn in favor of the non-movement. So if counsel says, well, she didn't specifically say this, the point is inferences that will be drawn by the jury. They're not to be drawn by a judge based on black and white and paper. With a cold record and no three-dimensional testimony or anything in front of them. And so for those reasons, it was improper for the judge to make a decision that disallowed my client to go to a jury. And for that reason, we ask that the judgment be reversed.
Thank you, Mr. Andrew. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.